Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy, your host. Clark Grant is manning the board, and this evening's guest is Meredith Benton. She is the founder of Whistle Stop Capital. She's got a great background and can't wait to share her story with everyone this evening. Remember that you can also find us on Facebook. We post our guests there every week. And the recording of the shows, of course, are available on our website as well as KBMF's website. You can also email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. In just a moment, Meredith will be here with us. And yeah, thanks for listening. This is Heartstock.
But on the other side, it didn't say nothing.
That time was with you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to New York Island.
This is Heartstock Radio. I'm your host, Carol Murphy. And our guest this evening is Meredith Benton of Whistle Stop Capital. Hi, Meredith.
Hi, hello.
How are you doing?
Fine. I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
You know, it was snowing today. And in the springtime, this is what happens in Montana. And when it does happen in the springtime, it can be a little annoying for some of us who are trying to plant our flower gardens. And you're in sunny California.
I am in San Francisco.
We spoke a little earlier today, and you mentioned it looked like it might be a sunny day there. How has your day been?
The miracle has arrived. It is sunny in San Francisco. Although we're still at our usual 65 degrees.
Yeah. When I lived in the Central Valley, it'd be like 105, and we'd go to San Francisco, and it'd be 65. And inevitably, every time, I would be mad at myself for not dressing, carrying more clothes with me. freezing, going from that extreme. Let's start out with a little introduction. What is Whistle Stop Capital? And yeah, just tell our listeners a little bit about what it is that you do.
Okay, so Whistle Stop Capital, we're a consultancy, and we work in a very sort of unique part of finance. We're working with our clients and their investment advisors, there's foundations, there's individual asset owners, there's companies that have been long established and companies that are starting up. And we're helping them figure out where do social and environmental issues, so where do human rights, where does climate change, where does workplace equity, how does that fit into their investment portfolios? Where does that fit into what they choose to put their money into? And given that there are no perfect companies, there's no company that does everything perfectly, what do you do if you like a company because it does great on climate change, but you're a little bit concerned about how it treats its workers, or a company that may have an amazing product in terms of what it provides for healthcare, but is a little bit concerning in terms of its environmental practices? Can you continue to hold that stock? And what rights do you have as an investor to change the way the company operates? Mm-hmm. So that's the space that we work in. We help our clients understand what they want to hold, what that means for their investment returns, or might mean for their investment returns, decide what that looks like for them. And then we work very actively with their investment holdings to create the type of company they'd like to be holding. One of the things people forget when they think about their investments, and this is true in everyone's investments, in a retirement account that you hold, in your savings account at the bank. Anytime your money is being allocated, it's creating, it's making a difference in the future, right? It's money that is going towards building a future vision. And so we try to be very intentional about what that investment in the future vision is.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can definitely relate to that. Any money that I've put aside for the future, I've never had a clear understanding of what exactly I'm investing in. I've been a little bit better as time has gone by and kind of tried to do more impact investing. So can you relate to that term? I mean, is that what you're doing? Does it fit under that umbrella of impact investing?
It does. And I'll do a little bit of history. I've been in this space for 20 years, and we used to call it socially responsible investing. And it was this idea that you were just paying attention to the social impact of where your money was going. Over time, and this is a great thing, over time, the marketplace has evolved and expanded and changed to allow for more nuance. So when people, and this is, I don't know when you use the term, how you're using it, but sometimes when people say impact investing, they're referring to a private investment, a direct deal in some way, or they may be just saying more broadly, I'm thinking about the impact that my investments may have, right? And I would say broadly speaking, I do all of that, right? It's about the intentionality in the investment. And what we focus in on very, very deeply is where is there an intersection between improving a company's, improving corporate practices on a social and environmental issue and strengthening that company over time. And so it doesn't really matter what asset class you're in or what investment structure you're in. The thesis of companies are strengthened when they manage their risks, when they're proactive around social and environmental issues, holds continuously.
So am I understanding correctly that you work both with investors and companies who are looking for investors to try and bring everybody to a place where our money is having a very positive effect in addition to making money and growing for the future?
That's right. That's right. Our work is you can stack up the outcomes that we're hoping for, right? We're absolutely hoping for it, truly from an activist perspective. You know, I think I said someone, and they didn't mean it in the nicest of ways, but I took it as a badge of honor, once called me a pragmatic idealist, right? We're looking to have real meaningful change around social and environmental issues. There are conditions in our world today around racial injustice, around climate change, around the treatment of others that are unacceptable and must be changed, right? These are unacceptable practices, and because they are business as usual does not mean that we should continue to invest in their continuation. That's one part of the stack. The next part of the stack is, especially for my clients, the intention is, it's not a philanthropic intention, right? The intention is to build towards a stronger world, a more sustained economy. And to do that, we have to be very aware of what the economic implications of a decision are. So everything we do very much focuses in on, does this allow for the company that I hold as an investor to be better in the future? And that includes their financial returns.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so I'm really anxious to hear more about what you did prior to this and what influenced you to be kind of a financial activist, it sounds like.
Right, that's right. So I'll give you my origin story.
Okay.
And then my aha moment. My aha moment, absolutely. So when I was in undergrad, I was take your stereotype of the environmentalist and apply it directly to me. I was completely in wool sweaters and baggy pants and Birkenstocks and the whole thing, and very passionate about environmental stewardship. And I was taking classes, an environmental studies course, and I was thinking that, you know, I understand all the you know, the facts and the data about how worrying what's happening is. And this is the mid-90s, right? And a lot of the problems, unfortunately, are the same. And I was thinking, you know, how do you get people to care? You know, what do we need to do to have something change? And so I actually had a double major, environmental studies and religion. And as I went through the religious text, my thesis at that time was, you know, I just need to pull out the portions of people's belief systems that tie up with stewardship and sustainability themes. But what I learned through these studies was there aren't, depending on the religion, the themes aren't strong enough for what I felt like they needed to do. There are some religions where it's very much a use and usage-oriented belief system. So I'm in my junior year, and I don't know what to do with myself, right? I'm at the cusp of graduation. And I took a summer internship with a small furniture-making factory that had believed that it was going to have a major contract with my school. A new building was going up, and they thought they were going to get to fit out the building with all of the furniture. And so they told the school that they wanted an environmental studies major to come in and do an environmental impact assessment of this factory. And it's rural Maine. And I went up, and this is before cell phones and before the internet. I went up and I rented a room by myself. I had to walk 2 blocks to the closest payphone to contact anybody. So it was a lonely summer from the beginning. But 2 weeks in, so the first 2 weeks they loved me. The first 2 weeks they loved me. I could go anywhere I want. I could talk to anywhere I want. The beginning of the third week, they found out they did not get the contract. That contract fell through. They got one small bit, which was a conference room table. And I was there for 8 more weeks. And they said, you know what? We've sort of changed our mind on this environmental impact assessment. We've decided instead that we really, and this, I'm not exaggerating this moment in time, we've decided instead that we really need someone's help sanding for the legs of the chairs. And so for the next 8 weeks, we'd really prefer that you spend your time sanding chairs or chair legs, not even the chair. I didn't rank to sand anything else besides the legs. And so that was, I mean, I was committed for the summer. So for the next 8 weeks, I had a rented room. I was, you know, a 15-minute walk away from a phone, and I sanded chair legs. And for me, it wasn't such a terrible experience. It was such an aha that this company, when they thought they were going to get all of this money, was all absolutely gung-ho. The first 2 weeks were incredible. They wanted nothing more than to be the greenest factory that Northern Maine had ever seen. And the second they found out that the business wasn't there, they said, you know what we actually need to prioritize is getting this order out. We need to get these chairs out the door faster. And that shifted for me. It shifted everything for me. And that's how I ended up in finance. Mm. I said, okay, if this is the argument we need to make, then we'll figure it out. And it turns out, right, 20 years later, it can be a very strong argument when crafted carefully.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you're familiar with the work of Raj Sisodia and his findings that are a little counterintuitive. If we stop focusing on the money and we start focusing on other issues such as, you know, benefit and the environment and innovation, we actually are, over the long term, more profitable. Do you believe that's true?
I believe that is often, but not always true.
Mm.
There are some topic areas where you have to have a humanitarian response. It's inappropriate to have a spreadsheet calculation around things like the treatment of refugees, right? Frankly, in real time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Health in a pandemic, right? It's an inappropriate response to have a dollars and cents view on how we should be, what we should be doing here.
Mm-hmm.
There are other issues where it is absolutely true. It is absolutely true that the attention to the greater good, so the internalization of externalities, right? So being aware of the broader impact of your actions, the long term requires that, and it requires that both for, right, the good of people
and planet, but also for the ability to have a profitable company over time.
Mm-hmm. So barring these, you know, outlying incidences that humanity has to encounter from time to time, like a pandemic, why do you think it is that companies can tend to be more profitable? I mean, what explains Raj Sisodia's findings? I've never come across anything that kind of definitively proves one way or the other why that is. There's some ideas and theories. Why do you think that might be the case?
Well, again, we're in real time. It's often easy to lose sight of the broader world beyond us, right? So very literally at this point in time, we may begin to feel like our world is encapsulated by a very small number of rooms, right? But it's actually a natural setting, even when we're allowed out of our houses and apartments, right? Your understanding of the world is set by the world that you see around you. And I actually teach at San Francisco State, and we just finished a class speaking about what it means to be working in a globalized environment versus one where you have a nationalized worldview or sort of just a very ethnocentric approach to the way you do your work. And if you have an idea that you live within a set number of variables, right? But the variables in my life are the rooms around me. If it's true, your calculations work. But nobody, and certainly our broader ecosystem and economies and cultures, nobody has a set number of variables, right? What we have instead is a very complicated, globalized system with multiple moving parts. And because you can't truly run an algorithm, right? You can't truly get your Excel spreadsheet to play out how your actions will be. You have to look at how do you sustain the whole? What is best in the long term across a number of entities and unknowns? And the thesis of we take care of each other has long-term benefit falls within that concept.
Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that in a very dramatic way during these times.
Yeah. Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
So let's take a quick music break. We will be right back shortly. We're speaking with Meredith Benton of Whistle Stop Capital. This is Heartstock. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy, your host. This evening, our guest is Meredith Benton. Hi again, Meredith.
Hello.
So what is kind of the overreaching mission of your company? I think we kind of have a sense of that already, but let's define that a little bit more.
The intention of what we do is to... not to sound too grandiose, right? But the intention of what we do is to allow for a fundamental shift in the way that financial models are calculated or managed, right? We're looking to both build out the case that these social and environmental issues matter. And to build that case, you need a lot of data and reporting that companies don't currently provide. Right? And we need companies that are committed to moving forward on these issues, right? We need quite a few things to build out the case. And then we need investors that understand it and are able to integrate it into the models that they have, right? We need investors outperforming using the data sets that are being created. And it sounds maybe slightly absurd, but it's entirely possible. Hmm. It's entirely possible because the way things have been playing out sort of on the ground, right, in real time, in real life, have proven that these things matter. Mm-hmm. So the mission of what we do, or what gets us up in the morning, what keeps us going, right, is knowing that we're seeing change happen in real time.
And it's really remarkable that you are taking on both ends of the spectrum, from the investor to the company. And how do you manage to work with both of those elements of this puzzle?
So I should be very clear that when I work with a company, I do it on behalf of an investor. So mm-hmm. I come to a company on behalf of either an individual or an organization that owns shares in that company. And so when we have the conversation, I'm not there. The company doesn't pay me. I'm not a consultant to the company. I'm there with the investor, and I'm helping the investor understand the importance of the topics that we're discussing and to convey that to the company. Much of what we focus on right now is really about corporate transparency and disclosure. And I'll give you an example. We know we have extensive amount of research over the years that says that the more diverse a company is, and not only diverse, so not just that they have a certain percentage of employee that fall within a diverse characteristic, but how inclusive the company is. So the percentage of employees that are diverse feel very much like they have a voice. We have huge amounts of data that say that companies that are diverse and inclusive outperform over time. They are stronger companies because they have a wider range of voices. They examine questions more carefully. They are more risk aware. They are more innovative. They are able to see new markets and capture them, right? We have tons of data on that side of the equation. And the investors that work with me, my clients, they see that, they understand that. They sometimes need validation of that through data points, but they fundamentally believe that. And so we bring that message to the companies in their portfolios, to the companies that they are invested in. And we make sure that those companies understand that this is something we want to see improvements on. And then we help the company see where the highest points of opportunity are, whether that's from a corporate governance perspective. You know, do they have the systems in place that they need to truly support a diverse and inclusive staff? From a data collection and assessment perspective, right? Are they collecting the data they need to understand the effectiveness of the programs they have in place? And then from a transparency perspective, you know, what are they sharing back out to investors, to their broader stakeholders and communities? Are they making sure that they have the right accountability systems and the right reward systems in place? And so we work together to have those conversations. And often when we talk about corporate behaviors and diversity, and, you know, particularly when we come to justice issues, there's this black and white view, you know, the company must be wrong, we must be right. That's never been the case in the conversations I've had. It's so very often about communicating clearly, to having a stronger understanding of everyone's value systems and needs and priorities in order to move forward.
So we're having this huge event, you know, huge global event where we're seeing these big disparities in certain populations, even here in Montana, that are more negatively impacted, you know, for so many reasons. How can our investment dollars change this scenario? How does the work that you're doing, trickle down to these populations who are feeling the brunt of events such as those current?
Yeah, so we, Whistlestop works with, in coordination with other investors. There's a very active community. So there's an organization called the Interfaith Center for Corporate Responsibility, and they've led a sign-on letter of investors and it sounds like an exaggeration, but I'm not, right? Trillions of dollars have signed onto a statement saying that two companies, so investors sign the statement and they send it to their companies that they hold, saying, we really want to see you treating people with respect, with dignity, with honor. This is not the exact wording, but this is the thematic as we go through this crisis, you know, and calling for companies to be attentive to the economic needs and the health needs of their employees through this time. It's very good work. And that's the Interfaith Center for Corporate Responsibility. For Whistle Stop, we've been narrowing down into a sort of a portion of this problem, and we've been really looking at the banking sector and what role they might be playing. And so we're in the process of developing a research report that looks at, we know historically, right? Historically, we know that a lot of our societal inequities have come from bank financing decisions in the past, right? Redlining, restrictions of who can and cannot receive funding and mortgages, banking decisions around which small businesses have easier access to capital, et cetera. We know historically that some of the inequities we see in real time now in health and in employment come from bank financing decisions in the past. And so we're looking very carefully and very seriously around the obligations of the banks during this very specific period of time, because we know that we are seeing two exponential harms being created to diverse communities. We're seeing the harms and job loss, and we're seeing the harms in terms of physical exposure to the virus being higher for people of color who do not have health insurance, people on the front line. We're seeing a disparity in racial exposure. And then we also know that we have pre-existing economic conditions that are going to magnify those harms. And so we're looking at, what are we going to talk to the banks about? What's appropriate to talk to them about? And how does their proactive movement now towards our future economic health, you know, what can they be doing to be very attentive to the situation we're in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that we could probably talk, do a whole show just on that topic in and of itself, because it's definitely a snowball effect that we're seeing. And I think it's,
yes, it is.
You know, another analogy, you know, peeling the onion, there's just layer upon layer of things that happen that lead to, you know, one more disparity. So as we're closing on the show here, how might our listeners find you, Meredith?
Oh, I'd be eager for that. We have a website, and on that website, you'll find all the contact information and a little bit more background on myself and my team. And it's whistlestop.capital. The dot capital acts as the .com, right? So it's whistlestop, like a whistle stop tour. Mm-hmm. Whistlestop.capital.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing your work and doing your work and for being on Heartstock. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Mm-hmm. So our time has just zoomed along here, but we will be back next week. And see you then. This is Heartstock. Peace.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5 Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at ButteAmericaRadio.org.